to the Public Service Project, a collection of public service origin stories. I'm Kate Dallaire, and I have the privilege of talking with current and former public servants to understand who they are, what shaped them, and why they chose a path of service. What's the point of this project? We're connecting one human and one story at a time. We're revisiting why we chose careers in service and what it says about us, our families, and our communities, and about America. We are also thinking through what service can look like more broadly. Melissa Newberg is an intelligence leader with over 15 years of experience spanning government, big tech, and the private sector. She began her career joining the U.S. Air Force as a civilian via a fast-track program and later served as a defense fellow in the House of Representatives before moving into the corporate world with roles at Meta and now Cirrus, where she leads the company's global intelligence content and strategy. Melissa, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Super glad to do this.
I am really interested in where you grew up and what your family was like.
Yeah. So first, I just want to say, again, thank you so much for doing this. This is really important, and I feel very personally, it's personally important to me. So thank you again for doing this. I grew up on Long Island outside of New York City. I spent all of my childhood there. My family, I would say, is middle class, but kind of blue collar workers type of work. My dad was doing kind of supply chain logistics at warehouses, and my mom was a preschool teacher. So sort of your average suburban life. I didn't have, and I say this for a reason, I didn't really have any background in the military or access to government workers or anything like that. My most formative kind of experiences in that were absolutely at the breakfast table with my my parents and my grandparents, who would come over every Sunday for breakfast. And mostly my dad and my grandpa would have very spirited discussions on politics and global affairs and things like that. So I can remember that from, you know, being a little kid and hearing that and having exposure to that at, you know, a fairly young age, and then all through my childhood and into teenhood and things like that. So that was definitely formative for me growing up, or hearing those kinds of conversations. But I didn't really have, you know, it was a classic suburban kind of lifestyle, I think, at the end of the day.
It's so interesting because I relate to a lot of the things that you said in terms of your upbringing and my first exposure to kind of the world of politics or policies was also spirited debate around the kitchen table every Saturday morning in a sort of multi-generational format with my mom and my aunts and uncles and my grandparents. And I think they would have identified as Democrats, Republicans, libertarians. Some would just like reject all political boxes. So I think we had a sort of a similar upbringing. And so now I'm interested in knowing, how did you end up working for the Air Force as a civilian, and what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it felt natural to wind up going into that space in many ways because of having that experience. Apparently is a very shared experience, I feel like, across a lot of people. And I did have my first semester in college. I went to school in upstate New York, and my first semester in college, I spent abroad in London. And that was a very transformational moment for me. Of course, only in retrospect, I think, did I realize how transformational that was, sort of the access to things outside of the U.S. for the first time, really, for me, in a very intentional and visible way. And I went into school as an art history major. I loved doing art. And then I think I was probably more always in the history place of that equation anyway. And then when I came back from that experience, I very quickly changed to international relations. And from there, it made perfect sense for me in what I wanted to do, and having those experiences abroad. And then I went into my master's abroad as well. And I came back and to the US after I finished my degree. And I thought, well, where do I go? What do I do now? How do I actually get a job now? I stalled enough with getting a master's, so now what do I do? And I came to DC, and that I just knew I needed to be the place where the jobs were. And this was 2010. So certainly this was where the jobs in that space were. And I didn't really know about what my options could be. I thought, State Department, I feel like that's a very visible thing to be a Foreign Service Officer, is something that lots of people want to do. I applied for that. I applied for anything that would, anything that would stick. I had an internship when I got here at a think tank, so that was okay. I was working at a restaurant as a hostess just to pay the bills basically until then. And it took about a year for a job to come around with a couple of stops and starts along the way in other places. I feel like is a probably relatable thing for a lot of people. And the thing that eventually stuck was this fast track program through the Air Force for civilians. And it's really meant for civilians that are not coming from the military. So you have no military background whatsoever to sort of inject more of that into military spaces. It's called the Palace Acquire Program. It still goes on today, so it's a great internship. But it essentially steps you through. You start as a 7, and then you step through up to 11 in 3 years, and then you outplace in your 4th year as a GS-12. And that was sort of my best pathway in. And really, from the moment I started it, I just loved it. I knew it was perfect. I loved it so much, and had so many opportunities that came out of being given that chance to jump in.
That's amazing. And you actually share something with the person whose episode will air the week before yours. So I guess I'll say last week's guest, Bill Russo, talked about how he was on track to study something totally different. I think he was going to study psychology and then went abroad and came back and was like, I need more of this. And I think that's really interesting that for so many people, your first big travel experience is the one that kind of ignites that curiosity and that passion and that desire to be engaged in some part of what we're doing kind of on the world stage. So that's so interesting. And then after your fast track experience, you went on to the House of Representatives.
I did, yeah. So I spent 3 years in the basement of the Pentagon in dark rooms doing briefings and things that will probably sound familiar to a lot of people. Really, my experience there set me up for what eventually going to the Hill. In between there, I spent 4 years in Germany at Ramstein Air Base, also doing intel there as an analyst. And those experiences really set me up super well to go to the Hill because it another transformational experience, really, that was because it couldn't have been any more different. Than my experiences, in true military spaces, being the, I was prepared and I loved that job so much, but there was a lot of learning to be done, of course. I didn't know rank, I didn't know, protocols, I didn't know what that environment felt like at all, having had no exposure whatsoever. And then
Probably
you add on
a
top
lot
of
of
that
lingo too, I imagine.
tons of lingo, right? Like acronyms, all of it. Yes, having to learn a lot of that. I remember studying rank so I could know what that meant. Also you add on top of that being the only young woman usually and civilian in that space, and that's a very tough you have to be really resilient to make it through that kind of environment. And when I left Germany to go come back to the US for my job on the Hill. That was had the was privy to a survey that they had done of civilians in Germany. And they asked, who has any prior military experience? And of all of these civilians on Ramstein Air Base, which is a very large military community of people, there were only two that didn't have prior military experience. I was one of them. And I remember just thinking about that and realizing just how different that makes you in a space like this. That was something another is one of those transformational moments that I remember very well.
I'm sure, as you just said, it was challenging to be the outlier in so many situations. Did you feel like there were advantages to it too?
Yes, it took me a bit to realize that, I think, and be okay with that. I think there was, I kind of fought for a bit, feeling like that. You're You're a woman in this space. You look different, as a woman, of course, but you also even look different. I'm not in a uniform, whether that's a suit and tie or, military uniform. And so there was this feeling like I just wanted to blend in and I didn't want to stand out, initially for a while. But with some time, I think I found that voice, and found the power in having that voice and being different in that room. And I like to think of it like I always had that voice in me. I think we all always have that voice in us. But it took the time to find the power behind it, and sort of leaning on that breakfast table, right? And like being in that room, there's a lot of parallels to being in that room with a general, and listening to, people speak or have opinion and voice what they want to say. And it took a bit to lean into, being okay with that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that is very relatable. And I also think sometimes there's pressure, especially today when we're so used to talking and hearing about imposter syndrome, then there is so much pressure that we maybe put on ourselves now to instantly overcome that. And I think it's also kind of part of the new kid process. I found that, in several jobs that I've held in the past, every time I was new, I felt a little unsure of myself because it's just destabilizing to be brand new and especially to be not exactly fitting the mold that you feel that everybody else fits in the environment. And as you gain confidence and skills and proficiency, it's easier then hopefully to kind of find your own voice and your own way of showing up in that space. And it sounds like that's exactly what you did. And then you went to the Hill. What was that experience
Yes.
like?
Back around to that. Yeah, it couldn't have been more different than working directly in the military. So I had the benefit of staying a Air Force civilian, and you get detailed to an office, and you work on their defense and foreign policy portfolio, and you really get exposure to what it's like to work in a personal office of a senator or a congressman and of a senator or representative. And another transformational moment. It couldn't have been any different. I think about this. It's such a silly example, but I think it perfectly encapsulates like how quickly I realized how different this would be. It was maybe my first week there. I went to use the restroom, and if you've ever been in an office building on the Hill, they're very old. There's, two or three stalls in a restroom, and there was a line of women waiting to use the restroom outside the door. And I was just blown away that this was even a possibility because I was so used to being in like Pentagon bathrooms that are 20 stalls, and you would be lucky to find one other woman in those bathrooms. And it's such like a silly example, but to see, how many young, driven women there were in this space, and not just women, but young people and other opportunities that were out there, was really cha was transformational for me to see that. And it I kind of can only describe it like it kind of cracked my head open, and I was like, wow, there's a whole world out here of opportunity and things that I can lean into as a result of having this experience. And that was the moment that changed for me, where I decided I would explore opportunities outside of the government.
That is so interesting. So, yay for lots of women, boo for not enough bathrooms.
Yes.
Because, like, for all women who are listening, we're very familiar with waiting in those super long lines pretty much everywhere we go for not enough stalls. And, but anyway, so then you made the decision to leave government. Was
I
that a
did.
really hard, was that a really hard decision? Did a lot of like angst go into that, or did you feel really comfortable making that decision at the point that you arrived at
I leapt fearlessly. I don't really know
it?
why. I don't really
I
have
love
a,
that. Yes,
yeah.
own that.
I think what I've done throughout my career as I've made change, like as I made changes or moved into something different, I always find the part of the new thing I'm doing that I know super well. So I think of it like 50% of this job I will knock out of the park. I know it, maybe let's say not even 50, 60%, because that feels a little bit more comfortable. I know I can do the hard skills that are required of this. And there's this other 40% that I don't know anything about at all, but at least I know I'll be okay because I can lean on those things that I do know and that I do have. And I very much did that with trying to make the private sector transition. So this was in 2018. Big tech was raging. They were hiring lots and lots of people. There were a lot of opportunities to look at. And what I wound up going into was the intelligence team at Meta, and it was exactly that equation. I knew I had the hard skills to do this job. It was a Intel analyst role. That's where my heart is, my comfort is. I can do that kind of job, but there's going to be a big portion of this that feels uncomfortable that I don't know, but that's okay because I could do these other things over here. So I tried to lean into it in that way going into it, but I really was ready for just something faster. I just wanted to move faster, more opportunity to develop and learn, not even just to promote. That was a factor for me as well, but it wasn't the biggest factor in trying to make that decision to go. So I really did just leap fearlessly, see what would happen. Something I think I probably should have considered at the time was just talking to some people about what this might be like or feel like. I didn't really do that. I wound up okay in the end, but that's why I now want to offer that to a lot of people as well, because I didn't even know who I could talk to or, how I would go about doing that or what that would look like or feel like.
Yeah, and it really helps to see others who have done it and just to get an idea of how it could look. And I think when you mentioned being really comfortable with about 60% and then being confident that you could acquire the other 40, I think that that is almost always the case when people are embarking on new adventures, but it's so difficult because it's so mismatched from how so many application processes happen. Like the requirements will say you need to have all of these skills, all of these experiences, and a lot of times people count themselves out because maybe they don't check every single box, or they, make a good pitch for why they're totally capable of acquiring the skills they don't already have, but employers have a hard time seeing that or understanding how to value those skills. So what advice do you have for people who are struggling to market themselves, not just to private sector from public sector, but really anybody who's applying for a job with the knowledge that it's a good fit, a good place for them to grow, but isn't quite sure how to talk about that missing 30 or 40%?
I think what I've seen a lot of people do is they lean into first the things they don't have, and they highlight why it's okay they don't have it. When I actually think that, and that's sort of like a practical thing. Like sometimes you don't even need to talk about that gap in your career. Like, 5 years ago, you'd had an 8 month gap. Like, you may not even need to bring that up. That may not even be a question, and you're not being deceitful by not talking about that. I think just refocusing on the things you actually do have and how you do meet the requirements. There's also and this is something I've been talking with a lot of people about too, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about how you can translate your public sector experience, especially when you've worked in agencies where you can't talk about what you did. How do you talk about how you did it and why that matters to someone else? So you supported this operation with this really, crazy impact and so cool. And that is going to be a great story that you have to keep in your head for a long time. But what that means for a private sector, company is that you led through sort of diverse circumstances or unexpected consequences. You navigated those. So I think it's a different kind of explanation, but you're focusing on how you did those things versus the what and what that actually means for someone else versus focusing first on, let me tell you about this thing that I know is a problem or I don't have so that you can understand why it's okay that I don't have it.
Yeah, and the skills that you acquire and what skills you can demonstrate through that experience, like, okay, I collaborated, I assimilated new information quickly, things like that.
Yes,
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
exactly.
So just thinking about how to talk about it. Where do you think that your deep well of confidence comes from? Because I can see it in you and I feel like you've drawn on it and I'm sure you've built it over time too. It's not just like you were born with this much confidence, but I can tell that you had to have at least some belief in yourself to go out and do new things and hard things and scary things that felt unfamiliar, and you've done it multiple times now. So where does that come from?
That's a good question. And I don't know that I always feel that. I don't know, your point. I don't know that I necessarily have imposter syndrome, but I think we're always our worst critics to some degree. So I always think I could be more confident or lean into something more. But I actually think it really took I 6 months ago I left Meta and now I'm at Cirrust, and that in and of itself was also, I'm sort of working through in the moment that transformational experience. So bear with me on that. But I think I've really come into my confidence now, partially making those tough decisions. So deciding to leave the government, deciding that I just wanted to see what else was out there, or diversify my experiences, learn new things. And I think I've grown the confidence in actually making those decisions, but then being able to be successful in that and feeling like I've gotten what I wanted out of those experiences for me, for myself, and now stepping into a new role, and this role actually puts me closer to that public sector work still, because a lot of our clients are government, and so I get to have that reach back into government and feel that sense of mission again. And so I think I again, I'm sort of working through it in the moment, but I feel like this I've gained new confidence in making this move myself.
I really love the way that you think about confidence, and I agree with you that maybe the courage is required at the moment of taking the leap or putting yourself outside your comfort zone. You don't have to feel strong every step of the way. And I found in my own journey that there have been moments where I have tons of doubt or uncertainty about what I'm doing, but I think the courage is in taking the leap, and then you build more by seeing that you're able to navigate that situation, whatever it holds. And so, now you're in this new position. Do you want to talk about your adjustment and kind of the things that you've been learning in this latest chapter?
Yes, I think I hinted at this already, but when I left government, I definitely I was ready for it. I was mentally prepared. As I said, I had skills I could lean on into the new job, so I felt comfortable in being able to do the new job. But there, it very quickly I realized that there was a gap in my feeling of a sense of mission and purpose in what I was doing. And that is not a knock on any company, any corporation, anybody at all, because you are so inherently in that space when you work in the public sector. You know what your mission is and what your purpose there is, whether that's a tactical mission or something very big and strategic. It's always there to lean on. It's in everything you do. It's in the air you breathe in that. You don't even have to think about it. And when I left, it very be became very quickly apparent that I didn't have that inherent mission, and I didn't have that inherent purpose-driven sense, and that really had to come from within myself. That feels selfish, I think, to some degree, especially when you've worked in the public sector for so long, and it's not about you, it's about something bigger. And this was very much a flipping of the cards for me to say, I need to think about myself, because if I'm to have purpose and mission and feel passionate about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, then it has to come from within me. It can feel inherently selfish, but I actually think that is maybe what some people need when they're leaving the public sector, is to sort of look back at yourself a little bit and look in the mirror some more and decide what you want and what you need and what's right for you. And so I spent 6 years at Meta, an amazing experience, and learned so many things. Now coming into this role at Cirrust, I think I get a little bit closer to feeling that government driven, that bigger purpose, that is sort of inherently always there because we have clients that we're supporting, in the government space. But I still take with me, I think, that sense of personal driven purpose and, what do I want and what do I want to offer others? And one thing that, now in this role that I've taken it through my whole career, but especially now, I lean into is really being someone that other people can see themselves in. That's really important to me, especially for young women. And so I find a lot of purpose in being that person for sort of another young woman who was like me and felt kind of, isolated and alone and the only, woman in that room. If they can see me in this position or see me in my place, then, that gives me a lot of purpose and mission on the personal side.
Yeah, and you've had such a diverse set of experiences too that I think people can find something to relate to in some facet of your journey pretty easily. So that's wonderful. And I also love that you're bringing up the fact that you don't have to derive all your fulfillment from one thing. So maybe your career fulfills one piece for you, but you also can acquire experiences outside or in your personal life that can allow you to give back in a way that is fulfilling. And I think on the topic of personal fulfillment and career, it's an interesting sort of process that you went through there. And I think so many are going through it now by choice or not, seeking a sense of mission, looking inward, looking outward, looking to each other. And I love your point about the fact that it needs to be fulfilling to you in order to essentially be sustainable. And so by thinking about yourself, you actually are equipping yourself to be able to help more people in the long term, because you're doing something that is sustainable to you, fulfilling to you, and that you can hopefully pour more of yourself into.
Yes, as they say, fill up your cup before you can fill up someone else's. I think that resonates completely with me now. I don't know that it would have before if I didn't make this move in an impactful way like that. And I, in having a lot of conversations with people that are trying to make that decision now, for one reason or another, do I explore something outside of the public sector? A lot of it is feeling like it seems like there is a sense of feeling lost to some degree, like not knowing what it's like, the unknown, not knowing what's out there and what your options are. But there is also this feeling of, I don't know what I am if I'm not supporting this mission or doing these things. And that's, I think there's a lot of guilt that comes with that. And feeling like you're leaving that behind, and I'm, leaving others behind, and I can't make that move, even if it's right for me personally, or for a future corporation, or for me to leave government is the right thing to do. There's a lot of guilt that comes with that feeling too, that I have found.
I think you're absolutely right. I've heard that from almost everybody that I've talked to in some form. And I think this, you also kind of reminded me that when I was inside government, one of my passions was kind of working to improve the experience of working for the government, for people who are there. And I think there's always room to grow in that area. And a lot of people have talked about flexibility and other kinds of benefits and privileges that we can offer to make the work more accessible to more people, right? I think what's really interesting about that conversation is that it usually centers around caregivers. And for me, I have kids, so I easily kind of fit into that box. And it's like, it makes sense she's talking about flexibility or about work-life balance. She has kids. And I always said, I think every person deserves the opportunity to engage in the conversation about how they do their best work and also what their life demands of them and how they can create a picture that fits and works for everyone. And I think that conversation is going to continue on. It might not look the same at this moment or in the future, but I think what you're talking about in terms of the conversation between guilt and wanting to find a way to work that feels sustainable and less taxing or more fulfilling is a conversation that we need to have, regardless of kind of what's going on, big picture.
Yes, and this is a silly, it's a silly little example. At Meta, they have these vending machines. They're real vending machines, and inside the vending machines is tech equipment, like a cable, a mouse, a cord to connect your monitor to your laptop. It's such a simple thing, and you just swipe your badge, and now you have like your cord, and you can go about your day and have your setup. And I saw that for the first time, and like my mind was blown. I was blown away that is so easy to do, because I vividly remember, digging through ginormous boxes of cords in the Pentagon in a cabinet, looking for, just this one thing. I just need to make two monitors work together, and that was such a struggle, and that was such a problem. And it was one of the first times I really saw, like, oh, it just doesn't have to be that hard. It doesn't have to be that difficult. And actually, that drastically improved the quality of my day. And I spent a lot more time doing my actual work than doing this other thing. And so, a silly example, but I think it does go back to
Not
your
silly.
point of, yeah, but it goes back to your point of, like, how do you do your best work and what do you need to do that? And it shouldn't, that doesn't always mean big, ginormous, grand things. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does mean parental leave and things like that. But other times it's as simple as, like, this cord is available to me and now I can work more efficiently because of it.
And this is where people like you who have had experiences inside public sector and private sector can kind of identify the strengths in both and say, hey, private sector, this is how you can infuse a sense of mission into your work and attract people that way. And public sector, here's how you get today's technology today instead of yesterday's technology today
Yes,
in the
yes.
hands of people who need it and just want to do their work and can't find a phone charger, which I've been there so many times. So that's also very relatable. But now, as we're kind of wrapping up, coming to the conclusion of a conversation, I think we could carry on for hours and hours because you're so interesting and I love talking with you. I'm wondering if there's something about you that you think our listeners would be surprised to know.
I am actually very introverted. I think that's not a surprise if you, like my friends would know that about me. I'm very introverted. I really need that time alone to sort of recharge and rejuvenate. But I do a really good job of flexing to be an extrovert at times when, I show up when I need to show up. But I think that is potentially surprising because what I've tried to do a lot more, again, like kind of stepping into this new role now in the last 6 months, is be more out there and be more forward in a more impactful way for the communities that I am and want to be a part of and participate in. And that is sort of the antithesis of me being an introvert, and I have to find a lot of time now to sort of take that time for myself and rejuvenate and be ready to do that the next day, every day. But that's something that is growing in importance to me, is really, being able to participate in something like this, where talking about, the public sector and that how important that work is. That is something I'm really passionate about. It's why I want to talk to, as many people that need to talk about what the private sector is like as I possibly can, because I want to make that more accessible to people. And then also, as I said before, too, being someone that someone else can see themselves in, that's really important to me, because I don't know that I had that necessarily. And so if I can even be that person for a few other people, then I feel that sense of fulfillment. And again, I don't know that that's that surprising necessarily, but it's something that I am, it's maybe surprising myself. I'm leaning into that in a more substantial way now than I have before.
What a beautiful answer. And I think actually, COVID caused so many of us to identify we're more introverted than we thought we were.
Yes, that is true too.
But this means then that anyone listening who has received or will seek Melissa's advice and support know that she is stretching beyond her comfort zone to do that. And
That
so,
is true,
Melissa,
yes.
this, I mean, now I can add to the list of things I admire about you because I admire your courage, your discipline, your confidence, and now your generosity too. I think you're being really generous with your time, your energy, your spirit. And I am so thankful that you agreed to talk with me today. I think people are going to learn a lot and gain a lot from this conversation. And I hope that that some people will reach out to you because I think they would be very lucky to have you in their corner. So thank you so much for being here today, and also thank you for your service.
Thank you, Kate. Yours as well, and I'm happy to talk to anybody that wants to sort of talk through it anytime.
All right, y'all, reach out to Melissa. Thank you.